Okay, so this is training call number six for SPSM 18. With me today is Crystal and Jen. Thank you both for being here. They'll be helping out in the chat. Just a note about the chat. So we've noticed that particularly with this topic, but it can happen with any call, but often with the anger topic, there can be some extra juice in the room, so to speak. The chat can be very active. All that makes sense, but just a reminder that very often, if you feel like you have a really burning question and you need to put it in the chat, very often it will be answered, like just a little bit later in the call. So we'll just encourage you to do your best to just take in the call. Maybe don't be super active in the chat. If you do have a burning question that you just really need to ask or something technical, of course, feel free to pop it in there. Of course, that's what we're here for. But it can just get a little overactive sometimes, we've noticed. Okay, so this is the handout, which I hope you all have with you for participating along with the old fill in the blanks. And we will get started. So, review, anger as medicine, additional resources. So this is in reference to some of the extra resources, videos, articles that are on the site. There is one on the healthy aggression page itself, which is exploring healthy aggression video with Irene. There's also the extra article by me on that page, which is about the annihilation work, which is like an add-on to the healthy aggression work. And then there is also the whole Lab 6 extra resources page, which also contains various practical demonstrations and more details. And when we're talking about practically working with anger, which is what these additional resources are, there's some things to keep in mind. So, why is working, this is starting now with the top here of the page, why is working with the emotion anger and developing healthy aggression, healthy being the first fill in the blank there, one of the toughest things to unwrap? Why can it be so tricky? My personal sense, we are trying to teach and learn something that we rarely see modeled in a positive and powerful way. So powerful is the other fill in the blank there. Yeah, so it can be tricky. We usually don't get healthy models for how to work with anger. For myself, I of course received some of the typical explosive anger, spanking, screaming, yelling, always being terrified, essentially. So that's a really bad example. It can also go another way of just being like totally repressed, like everything's always got to be nice. We always have to be kind. That is an equally damaging but less obvious form of a bad model because it's just repressive. And that seems to be the most common thing, is it's either repressed or it's explosive. And those kind of things go together also because sometimes you repress something until you can't anymore and then it explodes. So rarely do we see a healthy, regulated model that's powerful. And that's what we're working to teach. So, yeah, we're trying to teach something that most of us never saw modeled. So, expression and containment, returning to the sheet here, versus explosion and violence. So this is a passage from one of the biographies of Edgar Cayce, who, if you don't know Edgar Cayce, fascinating guy, was around in the early 20th century, and he did essentially what we would call channeling, but it was remarkably effective in terms of coming up with various remedies for people. And they were all natural, non-pharmaceutical, just natural remedies that were highly effective for lots and lots of people. He had a lot of scientific proof, kind of baffled the mainstream medical system, and at the same time, kind of fit in, because back then there was a lot more of that. Naturopathy was sort of more the mainstream back in those days. So, this is a quote from one of his biographies. Talking about anger. Anger is an emotion directly related to saying no. Of course, Cayce, isn't saying we need to run around blowing our stacks every day, but he did emphasize the need to express anger in the right way. Be angry, but sin not. Now, he does have some religious language, just so you know, he was raised Christian. But the point remains. Be angry, but sin not, for he that is never angry is worth little. But then Casey adds how important it is to have a container for that anger. But he that is angry and controlleth it not is worthless. Note here that the control does not mean suppression, but proper direction. It's a crucial distinction. So yeah, he's saying if you're never angry, right, if you're repressed, then that's not worth very much. And or if it's explosive and it's not directed in the right way, that's not worth very much. That's not very helpful. So exactly what we're saying here. And in the nervous system and somatic experiencing worlds, Peter Levine explains titration, which is crucial part of developing the ability to have it be contained, right? We'll get more into that. He says, we use titration to create increasing stability, resilience, and organization. Titration is about carefully touching into the smallest drop of survival-based arousal and other difficult sensations to prevent re-traumatization. I use the term titration to denote the gradual, stepwise process of trauma renegotiation. So, titration, this drop-by-drop approach, what that means is that when we start working with anger, we don't want to go from never having explored it in our life to huge cathartic practices, primal scream, smashing stuff, or just like really like using our imagination to visualize a lot of high energy stuff, big pushes, snarls, growls, all the stuff that we can eventually get into that may be good even, we still want to titrate our work with it at the beginning if it's new territory for us. So that may mean doing little bits of the explorations that are demonstrated in those extra resources that we talked about at the beginning of the page here. Another note about those additional resources. There's one demo in there where Irene is working with me, where we're doing this practice where she's squeezing my arm. And if you haven't watched that yet, give that a look. Just a note about that, there's sometimes concern that like, she's hurting me. We've had one person say that like, oh my gosh, she's abusing Seth. It's nothing like that. I'm a fully willing participant. And the part of the arm is very specific that you squeeze, because it's this solid bone here, you really can't hurt by squeezing. Like it's very, very resilient and strong. So like maybe if it's a huge person with a little person, yeah, you could do some damage, you wanna be careful. But generally, if you're about the same size, same strength, you can really give her and squeeze that part of the arm and it's not gonna be damaging, which is what happens in one of those videos. Another thing to note that you may not want to immediately run out and try to ask, you know, ask your partner to do this with you. Some education would probably be helpful first, right? Because they, if you have a partner that maybe is game, but they don't know about what the context is, it could scare them, right? If they have their own stuff. So you want to have a little education, be on the same page before you just run and grab your partner's arm and start squeezing the shit out of it, right? Like, it's, let's have some shared understanding about what we're doing here. Okay, so moving on to the next page about titration in practice. When we're practicing, and I'm reading here from the page again, experimenting and living, so living is the first fill in the blank there. When we're practicing, experimenting, and living, we want to navigate our experiences so that sensations and activations, second fill in the blank, meaning arousals, stimuli, stress, etc., settle on a case-by-case basis. So why would we particularly have you highlight living as the word that you're filling in there? Well, because that's kind of the most important part of this work. Like, yes, we want to practice, we want to experiment, and it's really in the day-to-day process of just living that these practices are crucially important. And we can practice all we want, but then if we get our just get really, really pissed by something and we forget to bring in what we've practiced, it's not going to do us any good. So living, while we're living, is when we really want to remember to practice all these things. And of course, we may need to experiment and practice to remember to do that. So we want to navigate our experiences so that sensations and activations settle on a case-by-case basis. In other words, don't flood the system. So that's the next blank there. Don't flood the system. We don't want to do too much all at once. Because when we're starting out, moving on the page, when our capacity is smaller, we want to aim to not let out too much energy all at once. Read that once again. When starting out, when our capacity is smaller, we want to aim to not let out too much energy all at once. We want to titrate our experience and experiments as much as we can. So again, just more detailed breakdown of what I was saying. We don't want to just dive in with this anger work. We want to learn to touch in and out. Now, I just want to note that this can be frustrating, right? Because some of us, especially by this point in the program, a lot of participants we've found have some anger moving. The early labs tend to really serve to open up the system, to build capacity, and then it's like, all right, let's rock. And I see some nods here. Yep. Yeah, that's normal. That's why we really work with a lot of education and capacity building things first, so that the anger can start to emerge organically. And it's a really good sign if you're feeling that. And so just note, anger is a high energy experience. It's like, think about it like a voltage of electricity, right? So you may be feeling like 100 volts, but your wiring maybe, at this point, maybe it only can handle 20 volts, right? So if you just really allow everything that you're feeling all at once, it can backfire a bit. You can end up really exhausted. The system might crash. You can end up with various symptoms, upset stomach, headaches, all that kind of stuff, because you're trying to force too much energy through wiring that can't handle it yet. So that's why titration is so important. And I understand it can be frustrating, but like, what might that look like, right? It might mean that, okay, I'm feeling all this anger. I can do a little bit. Maybe I'll just little sound, squeeze my fists, feel my jaw. Okay, that's enough. I felt a little energy move. Okay, good. That's what we want to experience. We want to have the experience of, I felt a little energy move and I'm okay. And we want to feel that over and over again. I felt a little energy move and I'm okay. And that's how we build and build and build our resources. Then we can do a little bit more and a little bit more. What to do in the meantime, when you still feel like you can't really get all that energy out? Resources. That's the other side of thing. Like, okay, I've done what I feel like I can with the anger. I'm gonna just do what I can to soothe myself. I'm gonna go to maybe the containment practices. I'm gonna do some long exhales, like cultivating the exhale. Maybe I'll just go to my resources, whatever they are that I know calm me down. And I know that this anger, like I'll give it a little friendly wave, like, hey, I see you in there. I'm not leaving you behind. I recognize you, but that's enough for now. Let's just calm down together and we'll be back, okay? All right, next little section here. Babies have this innate capacity in them. So when a baby is evolving organically, as it should, this healthy aggression, this is within them, as well as the innate knowledge of what's too much. So that's a natural thing. Now, for a lot of us who are forced into survival mode early on, we're having to rediscover that. We're having to rediscover, how do I know when it's even too much? Like, that alone is a process of discovery. Like, and that may be various symptoms, right? Like, you start to get a headache, or your belly feels a little gurgly, or you start to space out, you start to feel not fully present, you know, or you start to get really grumpy. Like, we'll all learn what our own indications are that that's too much. That's a really important part of the process. But babies, they have that innately. If they haven't been traumatized already. So what are some indications on the page here? They might start to fuss or look away or stop engaging when they've had enough stimuli. And another hallmark of attunement, there's the next fill in the blank, attunement is being able to recognize this as the caregiver and support their natural rhythm of approach and avoidance. So this is a very primal system, the approach and avoidance system. And yeah, they have babies will generally have an innate sense of this. Like they'll be, and I'm sure you may have witnessed this if you've been around babies. It's like, yeah, they're engaged and they're doing stuff. And then it's like they kind of pull away, they avert their gaze, they try to do something else. That's really important to pick up on and honor, because a lot of times what I'll see is parents then actually try to push more engagement. This can happen with feeding a lot. Like they may be eating fine, lovely, and then they start to turn away. And instead of actually just honoring that, they'll try to force more food, right? That's just setting up some real bad patterns. Like, oh, it's not okay to say I've had enough. I have to override. Like these are how these imprints get laid down in very innocent seeming ways. My boundaries aren't being respected, right? I'm trying to turn away and avoid something because I'm feeling overstimulated, but this person who I have to have in my life for my survival keeps on coming at me and wanting me to engage. So what do I do? I guess I have to go into survival mode. Maybe I have to brace a bit or numb or whatever it is, whatever the adaptation is. These things can happen really, really early in seemingly innocent ways. So this is where attunement and understanding this stuff is so important for parents. Okay. Our birthright. This is the next section on the page at the bottom of page two. Our birthright, healthy aggression and the energy of the emotion anger. So again, going back to babies and toddlers, these are the ways in which healthy aggression starts to emerge naturally. That's healthy. That's mine. That's the first fill in the blank there. Mine, mine, as the toddler grabs the toy from his brother. And we may ask, please share. No. Great. Okay. You're learning about your boundaries and about healthy aggression. Is now the time to talk to a baby about being selfish and sharing? No. They have no freaking clue about that. A toddler has no clue about that. That's complex societal structure decision-making stuff. The baby toddler is just like, no, mine. That's simple. Okay, that's yours. Let's find something else for your sibling to play with. You have that, right? The baby tugs on mom's hair while breastfeeding. Tiny punches of a baby's mini fists on mom's face. Biting the nipple is another one common while breastfeeding that's not listed here. Grabbing the dog's tail and pulling really hard. So, all of these things. It can be really tough because when our little ones start to show aggression in these natural ways, the correct response that's going to be the best for everyone can feel counterintuitive, which is to meet them with their energy. So, classic example, before I go on, one of Irene's clients, this is a while back, she was having this exact experience with her baby. So, baby is breastfeeding, starting aggression is starting to emerge naturally, starts tugging on mom's hair. What to do? So, she brings this to Irene. And Irene says, well, the next time that happens, I want you to try this. Really get in there with them and say, like, wow, you're so strong. Look how strong you are. Yeah, I really feel your power there, you know? And the baby doesn't yet understand English, it's too young, but it's about the intent, the energy of meeting the little one in a spirit of celebration. She did that, never pulled on her hair again. That was it. Just needed to be recognized and honored for their strength, their aggression that was coming out. And I've seen that in many types of examples. So in all of these circumstances, it's like we need to meet them. So, going on to the next section here. These are some examples. This is the top of page three on the handout. These are some examples of the beginning energies of healthy aggression and life force being felt and expressed. So, all those examples I just read on the previous page. That's just natural expression of healthy aggression. But then going on here, but. If the mom or caregiver doesn't know how to meet that energy, so there's the first fill in the blank, meet, in a caring and inviting, attuned and encouraging way, the baby won't feel met and she'll sense unsafety. Without consistent safety, you get a slow decline of life force energy expression, shut down. The biological message is that of no acceptance. That's the last fill in the blank there. Biological message is that of no acceptance. And when a person doesn't accept you, especially your primary caregiver, you don't accept yourself. That energy of non-acceptance turns inward, next fill in the blank there, to low self-esteem, self-hate, and shame. More on this soon. So shame is the last fill in the blank there. Really important. So again, this is how imprints around anger being dangerous, about my expression is shameful or wrong in some way, my life force is wrong, can happen. And it's like there's no overt abuse happening, right? There's no neglect happening, really. Like mom's there, dad's there, caregiver's there, given what they can. But there's just this lack of education and understanding about how to meet our little ones when they start bringing this big energy. And it's because, again, this isn't in our model, right? This isn't in our system. If our anger was repressed, if we went through similar things, like when our baby starts presenting aggression, it's going to feel scary to us because we won't have it in ourselves. So it's how this just continues and continues and continues in these subtle ways. So when we can meet our little one's energy with that acceptance, that celebration, yeah, maybe we get a little like, yeah, our hair gets pulled a bit. Like, yeah, but our baby's not really gonna hurt us, right? It's early on that we start to really be able to shape how these patterns go. Whether that be a celebration of life force and acceptance and attunement and we're on the same page, or one of repression and I feel not safe and now I have to go into various survival strategies, and then there's all sorts of attachment issues that tend to blossom out from these very primal experiences. Okay, just have a sip of water. And just take a moment, maybe while we're all just pausing here. Again, this is high energy stuff. We're talking about anger, we're talking about babies, right? This may be stirring up stuff for you. So maybe just check, like, can you feel your feet on the ground? Is your butt on the chair? Are you here? Just noticing where you are. Are you breathing? Just taking a little moment. Yeah, just noticing something in the chat. Remember being told by my doctor to flick my baby's nose when she would bite me during nursing. Yeah, you get all sorts of shit like this from doctors. Oh, they're hitting you? Just hit them back, lightly. You know, I mean, seriously. It's like, oh my God. They just don't know. They don't know. Okay. All right, so then further down, page 3, therefore, to re-access the true self, one must tap into their healthy aggression and wake up the life force energy that was shut down due to basic survival responses so long ago. To access the true self, re-access the true self, one must tap into their healthy aggression and wake up the life force energy that was shut down due to basic survival responses so long ago. So, some ways in which that happens. The lessons of making sound. So this is the voo or voo-ah, is to help spark up life force energy in small titrated pieces. So there, it's a container, like we were talking about, right? We need a container. The sound is the container. It's just a voo, or it's a voo-ah. And in whatever way we may do that in terms of volume, titration, there's lots of ways we can play with that. How much we open the jaw or not. There's an extra resource actually in the lab for the VUA lesson where it's exploring that in titrated ways. There's all sorts of ways that we can titrate that experience. It's about feeling that vibration of sound connected to coming out of the mouth. Just it's an energy, right? I can feel something. I can feel a vibration happening. So it's a very simple, contained way to start getting our energy moving. Then, and here's the second point on the page, it, voo-ah, helps to mobilize, there's the first word, mobilize that deep, visceral, biological, cellular knowing that you, I, matter, and that you deserve to be alive. This is the last one. That's fundamentally what we're talking about here. Like when our life force vitality expression gets shut down, it's kind of telling us like, yeah, you don't deserve to be here. It's like my life force energy isn't acceptable, which, okay, I guess I better shut down, right? So just allowing ourselves to start to mobilize is the key word there in that sentence. We're getting something moving. We're getting some energy moving. And especially with that voo-ah, we're starting to activate the jaw, which is one of the most primal centers of healthy aggression. Where we would bite, where we would speak our words, where we would mobilize our sounds. Last point here on this page 3, this is very different from acting out or watching a movie that might spark a produced aggressive reaction and feelings of adrenaline. So this is often where people are at when they enter into this work. If they haven't been fully repressed, then a lot of people will just act out their anger in all sorts of ways. Oftentimes this is passive aggressive ways, right? Where, like, for example, giving someone the silent treatment, that's aggression. That is acting out aggression, but it's passive aggressive. Like, I don't do anything. I'm just not speaking, but there's a hostility to that. Like, I won't give you what you need in terms of connection. I'm withholding that when I know you need that, right? There's many ways in which anger can be aggressed passive aggressively. Like, I'm never going to put the toilet seat down, right? There's a classic one. You're living in a two-sex household, that can be a one between where the man is just always like, yeah, it's a simple thing to do, right? It's considerate. But if you never do it, what's going on there, right? There can be little ways. And then there can be big ways, road rage, right? Like, I'm fine, but then I get on the highway and this is my opportunity to like scream at people and cut people off and drive dangerously. That's a little more actively acting out. Movies, this is a big one. There are people, and this is totally normal, where like really violent or even horror movies can feel really like soothing in a way. They can feel like you feel met. Like, I was never in this camp. I never got it, but I knew people who, yeah, like they were really into scary, scary movies. It was a way of meeting what was inside of them externally, right? So you get that adrenaline rush and it's like, oh, it's a container, right? Here's a container that I can enter into. I have control. I can press stop at any time. I can pause, whatever. I can leave it. I can come back. And I get to experience in this container of the movie this adrenaline, this fear, this horror that is already within me. And I get to essentially be validated by my experience with the movie. So these are all different ways in which we may be working with anger in a way, but it's not actually resolving anything. It's like it's not getting into the mobilization of life force. It may be producing a chemical response like the adrenaline, but that's a little different. Okay, going to page four here at the top. Cathartic practices tend to tap into this kind of only outward expression. So, cathartic practices, instead of a sort of titrated, careful exploration of voo-voo-ah, you just go straight into primal scream therapy, where you're just like bellowing at the top of your lungs and screaming and losing your voice, essentially. Or you're smashing stuff with a baseball bat, or you're getting a styrofoam thing to beat stuff with, or whatever it is, like big outward expressions. They don't work because they're too externally focused. So that's the next fill in the blank sentence here. We want to connect to our internal sensation, emotion, and then move that energy and action out. So we don't want to start with the big explosive action. At first, we really need to feel inside. What is driving that action? What is the energy that wants to mobilize that action? Right? That may take some time to discover. At first, like the way that we may know anger is as just thoughts, like really grumpy, intrusive thoughts, or like revenge fantasies that like we play out over and over again. Or I should have done that, I should have said this. There may be ways in which we just find ourselves holding in our posture, in our across our shoulders, in our neck, in our jaw. Our experience of anger may just be physiological, but it's in tightness and bracing in all these areas associated with aggression. We may not realize that we're angry because we're so used to holding it in our body. And we're just like, oh, I'm just tight. It's like, actually, you're angry. And this stuff is wanting to move, but it's been stuck for decades. So, I mean, think about, say you had the impulse and you really needed to push someone away, but you couldn't do it because you were too little. That's what we call incomplete self-protective response, incomplete procedural memory. Those instructions, if we go through trauma, stay in the system. This, like, I want to push. Can stay in there for decades. And that makes all of this incredibly tight because you have these under the surface instructions playing out saying, push, 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 get ready. And so, okay, I'm ready. Like, but I don't know that that's what's needing to happen. So it just expresses as a tremendous amount of tightness in the body. There's all sorts of ways in which we may be angry, but not really know it. And that leads into the next section here, the tricky, sticky nature of anger and healthy aggression work. So, first sentence, it can be tough to imagine a lifetime of stored up anger and aggression coming out in one big bang, right? Yeah, that's what we don't want to do. A person will stop their aggressive impulses. And even just the feeling of the anger energy as they feel, sense, or think it might harm others. So I want to pause with that sentence. A person will stop their aggressive impulses and even just the feeling of anger energy as they feel, sense, or think it might harm others. So that go way back to the baby. Right? That is where that kind of impulse gets planted. Right? That's my energy is coming out. Oh, I'm perceiving that it's not wanted. I need to shut it down. And then as adults, when we go to reconnect to ourselves and we start to find that anger, as soon as we start to really feel it, there can be a really instinctive like shut that door. Like, we're not going there. And that is often because of early, early imprints in the system about it just not being safe. And that can happen through these very subtle ways that we were talking about. It can also happen, of course, through absolutely overt ways, like I experienced some of, like that other people experience, you know, that can be horrific abuse. That's a whole different, you know, that's a different ball of wax. But it can also lead to the same kind of shutdown. It can also lead, of course, to the other side. Real bad abuse can lead to, of course, a person themselves being very violent. And this is something that we do, and of course, it's one of the harder truths about trauma, but that perpetrators are themselves always traumatized individuals, invariably. You don't get to be a person who wants to harm or kill other people without yourself having been tremendously harmed. People are not born evil. So that's something that can be tough to reconcile. But it is something that often comes at some stage of healing. Like for myself, yeah, eventually, like I had to recognize, oh, I was terrified of my dad. He was essentially a monster in my view. And as I got older and I got to do this healthy aggression work and move these charges out, I was able to open up to the fact that actually, yeah, okay, that was true. And without invalidating my experience, I can recognize that he was tremendously harmed and scared and never got support to work through any of that. So the only thing he knows how to do is act out and explode. And it's because of what happened to him. Does that mean that it was okay what happened to me? No. And that's the complexity of this work is being able to hold those things. For a lot of people, it's not important that you be able to hold both those things right away, right? Like you can't fake compassion. It's not useful. Like you can understand, yes, I know my parents were harmed, but like you not really give a shit, you know? Because like until you get the charges out yourself, you can't, it'd be very hard to genuinely feel, to have the space within you to feel that sense of sort of forgiveness and compassion. And don't try to fake it. Like it's just gonna suppress your energy. Feel the anger. Just celebrate that, allow it. You'll get there organically if it's important for you. But it is an important thing to recognize as part of, as we learn this education, you start to realize, yeah, the monsters in the world are monsters because of something monstrous that happened to them. Okay. Bit of a tangent there. We'll circle back. So, underneath the tricky, sticky nature of anger aggression, the third bullet point here. And/or a person might stop and not allow themselves to feel it because it was unsafe to express it in the past, or the expression of anger they knew from their family system was explosive, abusive, and terrifying. So that's what we were just talking about. Next bullet point. There is often immense shame coupled with these powerful life force sensations and emotions. So let's dig into that sentence a bit before we move on. There's often immense shame coupled with these powerful life force sensations and emotions. So, if our life force was shut down, even in a very like passive way or seemingly benign way, like we were talking about with the babies and nursing and stuff, that still sends a signal to the little developing system, like my life energy isn't okay. It's not accepted. That results in what we would call a toxic shame imprint, where it's not that a healthy kind of shame, which is that like this behavior is bad and dangerous and I need to not do it. There is a place for that. It's I am bad. I am not accepted. I am worthless. That's toxic shame, where it's not about a behavior, it's about the person. And that can get imprinted in these subtle ways, it can get imprinted in overt ways. There's all sorts of spectrum in the ways that can happen. And that is very often what we will see as anger starts to arise and we're still building the capacity for it, the system may start to go into shame or collapse. So just be aware that that is a normal thing if that happens for you. And what might that look like? You start to feel a little anger, you start to maybe go with it a little bit, and then tears just take over. It goes instantly to grief, or it goes instantly to like, oh, a sense of just defeat, or remorse, or literally shame, like, ugh, like it feels sick, feels gross. There's lots of ways it can show up. But that's not unusual, and it shows that, yeah, there was some strong repression against this energy in the system. And it speaks to the need for titration, because we don't want to just bypass that shame. We need to work with it. And there's a lot more on that actually on the next training call. For now, I'll just say that if that's something that's happening for you, if you're feeling a sense of shame or collapse come in as you start to work with anger, just like, okay, that is your indication of where your edge is. So maybe you start to go into it, that happens, back off and really care for yourself. Just really, okay, oh, I know, I understand what's happening, sort of name it for yourself. Like, oh, okay, this is that inner repression coming up. This is what Seth was talking about. There's this imprint where it's like telling me this isn't okay. Let's really recognize that. Maybe do a little self-touch, use your resources, maybe breathe a little bit, and then see if you can connect to your posture. Can you just feel like, what is my tailbone doing? Has it become tucked? Am I collapsing? Are my shoulders down? And maybe you just feel a little touch on your chest or your belly. And you just feel the tailbone a little bit. And maybe you rock a little bit, maybe you lift the tailbone a bit, see what that feels like. You tuck it again. And you just work somatically. You work with, because the posture of shame, right, is, right, or collapsed. It's the tailbone is tucked, the shoulders are down, the head is dropped. So if you're feeling some of those imprints arising, it can be useful to work with it in the posture. So, okay, let's allow the posture that's happening and then let's move out of it and let's feel the ability to move in and out of it. Feel the spine's ability to move. Just a one way to start exploring that. And then we'll get into more ways of how to work with toxic shame later. This is the last bullet point in this section on page 4. Another commonality, having zero model for any kind of life force expression, meaning the environment was devoid of all emotion, shut down, and any sign of warmth or affection was the rule. So this is another sort of more global thing that can happen, where it's just like, it's not just anger that's shut down, it's everything. Like all emotion is verboten. And it's just, let's just keep everything very calm and repressed. And that's also, not unusual. It can be especially prevalent in some cultures more than others. It varies even from household to household within cultures, but not necessarily unusual for all expressions of emotion to come across as scary. That can happen. Again, this is part of the intergenerational cycle. Sometimes cultures that have been through more war can have more of this repression if there's been like a history of actual war and conflict, because it's just, feeling our feelings wasn't the priority. Like survival. Literal survival was the priority. And those imprints can get passed down quite powerfully. Okay, just gonna pause for a moment again. Maybe have a little stretch. Have a little water. I'm just going to scroll a little bit through the chat here. So I'm noticing some questions about what to do with older kids. Because, if we didn't know what to do when this stuff started happening as babies, it can spiral. And there can be all sorts of causes. I mean, there can be all sorts of causes for kids being angry. I mean, the world, school, just going through medical procedures, surgeries early on, even if they're life-saving and necessary, can result in a lot of anger coming out. There's all sorts of ways in which older kids might start to express anger, throw things, hit, etc. The principle is the same. It's a little bit, can be a little bit more difficult, may require more, longer intervention, like the longer it goes unaddressed. If your kid, though, is still anywhere in the age where imagination and play is an option, that is your vehicle for working with aggression in kids. So there's lots of ways to do that. Let's build a castle together. Let's destroy the castle together. Arr, or you destroy it, or I'll build it and you destroy it, right? Let's make something, let's destroy it. Let's give that thing a container. Just using the imagination. Like, hey, let's be dinosaurs. Kids love dinosaurs. So let's be dinosaurs. What dinosaur are you? Oh yeah? Oh, well, okay, so what do you sound like? Whoa, that's a big loud sound. That's really scary. Like again, we're meeting and celebrating their energy. Like, let's stomp around, let's be Godzilla, let's burn, destroying the city. Right, whatever, there's so many ways. Let's like another one. You stand in front of the bed, like as a parent, you stand in front of your bed. I bet you can't push me over. Bet you can't. All right, and then you make them work for it, but then you fall down on the bed. Oh, you got me! Oh my God! Oh, right. Or like pushing against each other, and you let them push you across the room. But make them work for it, right? Just all these ways in which you engage them physically together in a spirit of connection and play. That's often all that's needed to help this stuff just move through. Now, there can be more complex cases. I had a client which was a young girl, around 7, 8. And she had had a series of really horrific brain surgeries as a baby. I mean, the surgeries obviously were absolutely necessary to save her life, but brain surgery, multiple brain surgeries as a kid is pretty horrific for the system as a young baby. And as a result, she was experiencing seizures, totally uncontrollable behavior, couldn't be in school, couldn't really function. And they thought that it was like an epilepsy thing, but it wasn't. It was actually just tremendous amounts of sympathetic charge locked up in her system, trying to find a way out. And so all the stuff I just talked about, I did with her. She would come in, and when she left, my office would be destroyed. Like we would just like throw stuff everywhere. She would pour water all over the floor sometimes, and we'd stomp around like it was a swamp. She would make potions. I had this skeleton that Irene had in the office for like anatomy stuff, like one of those life-size skeletons. And she liked to take that down, and then she would mark. I got washable markers, and she would mark all over it with red. This was her reenacting the surgery that happened to her. At one point, she wanted to stick a lit match into the skeleton's eye. Probably had something to do with the brain surgery, almost certainly. All of this stuff we did. And then, like, she would basically beat up skeleton, mark them all up. Let's fix him. Let's fix skeleton. Oh, yeah, okay. Let's wash him up. Let's put some bandages here. We did that over and over again. So, these are ways of helping her meet this tremendously violent energy that was within her. And after, like, a few months, no more seizures. Like, that was it. Still took a long time to like fully come into full functionality, but the acute violent sympathetic energy was able to be released through these explorations, play. And yeah, it got messy. Like, it's okay to get messy with your own kids. It may be necessary. And so this is another thing as a parent, if you want to help your kids, you got to be helpful. You got to be familiar and comfortable with this energy in yourself, right? You have to be able to play. You have to be able to make sounds. You have to be able to connect to your aggression so you can meet them. That's what our kids need. They need to be met where they're at. I saw another question here. Serious chest muscle pectoral strain to the point where I cannot type without injury. I'm in SPS 17. I thought it might be grief, but now I wonder if it might be anger suppressed in my chest muscles. Oh, that's very likely. So just what I was talking about, like I need to push, but I can't, or that could all be through here. And very often, grief and anger are layered together as well. So you might be right for both. There may be tremendous grief that needs to be expressed, and then there may be tremendous anger that needs to be expressed. And like with all, again, titration. If this is very hard to mobilize, you probably want to start with very simple things. So that may be instead of like really pushing, what if you just stand and like put your hands on the wall and you sort of lean into it a little bit and then you lean away from it? Like you just start to explore what it's like to move a little bit of force through those muscles, just tiny bits. And then, like, you do that a couple times, you leave it for the day. Notice what happens. What's the difference between vu and vu-ah and the perspective of energy? Vu-ah is a bit more leaning into aggression. So vu, I think about just as primal energy. Like you're getting the energy moving. Vu, usually feel it in the belly. And it's like this vibration that's moving through the body. As the ah start to happen, that can go into all sorts of directions that are more about aggression. So ah, right? That's the jaw getting ready. So the vu ah is more directly connected to life force energy and the sympathetic response. Okay. Yep. Great, great. Thanks, Jen, so much for rocking the chat. All right. So, moving on, this is the last page, page five. Exploring healthy aggression, lesson review. Anger is often associated with tension. There's the first bullet point, last page. Anger is often associated with tension in the body and its musculature system for the most part. So that's everything I was talking about with those things that want to happen with our body that didn't get to happen, and the energy is still there saying you need to happen. Sometimes we need to create safe, aggressive experiments to help free up stored anger and aggression. So that's the stuff we're talking about with the vu-ah, experimenting with pushing. Squeezing, of course, is another one I've talked about before, the TheraBands. If you weren't on that call, let me just grab one here. These guys, these are called TheraBand Flex Bars. Really, really handy for that motion of really mobilizing the shoulders and the arms in a twisting motion like you would do if you were wringing someone's neck. You can also use a rolled up towel, as I talk about in the Healthy Aggression article. Just we're wanting to find ways to mobilize in a safe way these energies that are wanting to move. So these are again ways in which the person who asked about the tight pectoral muscles across the chest here, like that might be like all you do is feel the grip and that's it. And then maybe the next time you little twist and then you stop. Little titration into that squeezing. There's different levels of flex bar. I use the strongest one. This is the red one, there's a blue one and a green one. I think it's those just three levels. It can sometimes be good to just get all three, just to play with different levels of resistance. Yeah, lots of ways you can work with it. Okay. Then last bullet point here. Experiments for helping to free up this energy are, but not limited to, accessing the jaw and facial muscles, like we've been talking about. Vu and vu-ah are subtle entry points to unlock held aggressions. A little Peter Levine quote here, "The jaw is the linchpin to anger." Incredibly important part of working with anger. Doing the vu and vu-ah with movements of the hands, feet, pelvis, eyes, whatever the impulse brings. So that may be then like I'm now sitting much more over my pelvis. I'm gonna do the vu-ah and I'm gonna let the arms move. So it'll be like vu-ah. Just whatever the impulse is, getting movement through the arms, the torso. My jaw was also starting to move left and right, pelvis rocking a little bit. Whatever the impulse is, bring in the rest of the body. Start moving other parts of the body along with the sound. Then, of course, snarling the lip, baring the teeth, biting, not literally biting, of course, other people or things that will hurt your teeth, but actually. I have had some, there's have been some instances, especially with lots of dental experiences, where the impulse to like bite the dentist is so strong and never got to happen that like we need to find a way to bite. So a piece of untreated leather can be used for this if you really just need to bite something. Or like next time you have an apple, just like like really give her. Imagine that you're, biting the dentist's hand off, whatever it is, whatever the impulse may be. There's ways you can explore that as well. In terms of these, all right, the face, that can be tough for a lot of people even to do, to raise the upper lip like that. So that is a starting place for some people. That feels weird. And then like you feel like what that does to the eyes just instinctively. Like, oh, okay. Snarling, yep. Growling, hissing sounds. Right? What sounds do mammals make when they're angry? How can we start to give ourselves permission as a mammal to make some angry mammal sounds? In all of this work, it's important to recognize it's about being a mammal, right? Like these are not experiences that are about our higher brain, really. Like we need our higher brain to help us titrate, contain the experience, understand it, give it context. But in terms of the actual mobilizations, they want to feel primal. Like they want to feel like I am a caveman, I am a cavewoman, I am this mammal that is just allowing my mammalian physiology to do its thing, right? Pushing with the hands, flailing the arms, that was some of that when I was sort of moving the arms around. Again, it's not just like really fast and explosive, it's kind of contained. I'm feeling the energy, feeling the movements. Stomping the feet, that can be a good one. Saying no, saying stop, stop that. Oftentimes the entry point into working with aggression can be through words that never got to happen, right? So just like, no, like that can be quite powerful to let yourself just stomp, say no. What does that feel like? What does that feel like in the context of, say, if you start to think about past experiences where you didn't get to do that? And then movements to hit, punch, or scratch. And again, these can be very important. And again, we want them to be contained. So we'll often talk about doing them in slow motion, really feeling the effort, like, and like I'm feeling every muscle in the arm as it moves, my shoulder, allowing these movements to be slow enough that we can stay connected to the inner experiences, the emotion, the sensations. That's the key with anger and working with healthy aggression, is like it's not just about the action, it's not just about the mobilization, it's also about being connected to the feelings inside, the sensations inside, and the environment we're in. If we lose connection to any of that stuff, we won't be able to successfully process it. Hence, we don't like big cathartic stuff. We like titration, we like to go slow, we like to build capacity such that as we move into these higher energy practices, we are staying connected to the environment, to ourselves, to all the actions that are happening. And then just a final note, that there is a YouTube playlist, which actually I'll go ahead and put that in the chat because I bookmarked it. So in addition to all the stuff on the site, and some of these videos are also on the site, this is a whole playlist that is all Irene's videos on anger. So if you want to see more of that, there's other ways that we can work with aggression that are really great. Like I just saw a note, lifting weights can be great, is great for aggression. For sure, that can be really great for aggression. Any kind of physical, intense physical activity can be really helpful for mobilizing sympathetic energy. Again, though, as long as it's not over our capacity and we're staying connected to our experience. So I don't want to, if I just go in and like pump a bunch of weights, but I'm not really feeling anything, that could be good for our body, but may not do anything to help renegotiate or work with stored up trauma. However, if I am lifting weights and I'm really feeling the effort and I'm like allowing myself to maybe make some sound as needed, or like maybe I'm seeing something that is part of my trauma history and I'm feeling the force that I'm exerting, there's all sorts of ways in which it can absolutely be part of it. If we're more advanced, maybe some more fast actions, like working with a punching bag, something like that. I did boxing for like the last 8 years. Not actually boxing other people, some of that, but more just training. And that was actually really helpful part of my healing process, but only once I had laid the foundations so that the boxing wasn't really about my trauma history. Like by that point, I had renegotiated enough of my past that I could go into a training session or working with a bag, and I wasn't like imaginarily beating up my father or something, because that, again, it's too fast, it's too explosive. But in terms of being a channel for healthy sympathetic energy and to like keep that energy moving and vibrant, yeah, awesome, awesome. Any kind of intense activity. Okay, I'm just scrolling a little bit through the chat before we wrap up. Yep, someone asked about, bracing in the abdomen. That can be part of it as well, though often bracing in the abdomen can be connected to just a global sense of threat as a baby. Also, it can be connected more to the fascia sometimes than the musculature. Oftentimes, the fascia in the abdomen will become very rigid if we grow up in chronic stress, chronic strain. Someone asked about clenching their jaw. Yep, classic expression of held sympathetic energy. When you catch yourself doing it, rather than trying to relax it right away, see what happens if you do it a bit more. with a little bit of intention. Like, oh, I'm holding my jaw. I'm not just going to immediately, I'm going to, and then I'll let it go. And then maybe I'll feel it again. Right? It's when something's been stuck, it's about learning that we can, again, move into it, move out of it. Like, we want to get the energy moving. So we don't necessarily just want to try and relax when something's super tight. We want to engage with it intentionally and then see what the other side is like. Move in, move out intentionally. So, someone who's not into the idea of wringing someone's neck, yeah, we don't want to wring anyone's neck for sure. However, for people who have been attacked and never been able to defend themselves, the animal self needs to act. That's all there is to it. Now, we may all find our own ways, but at the end of the day, our mammalian self, this isn't about spirituality, okay? This is an important distinction. I mean, trauma healing is not about very often like being in touch with our higher self or our spiritual self. Certainly can enable that much more at the end of the day. Like, we can't really be a fully spiritual being until we are an effective mammal, right? If our mammalian self is clogged up with survival energy, any thoughts around spirituality and compassion is just spiritual override. We're just overriding the urgency of our mammalian self. We have to learn to work with this energy in some way. And everyone's got to learn the way that's right for them. But at the end of the day, if we were attacked, if we were abused, the impulses to defend ourselves and fight back must be mobilized. Period. You got to find the way that's right for you. But it's gonna be mammalian. It's gonna be contain some kind of aggression, some kind of expression of violence in a healthy way. Okay. So lots of stuff in this call. Again, lots of stuff that can be potentially activating. Totally get it. If we have resistance to working with anger or feel like it's wrong, that is just the information we took in at a young age. And totally normal. It's freeing up our energy, right? We're liberating our energy. Like a final example from the annihilation work, which is one of the things that people have a real hard time with. If they're coming from a more spiritual background, if they're really, talking about coming from a place of compassion, love for everybody, which is super admirable, love that, very important. However, if at the same time we want to destroy somebody within our primitive self, if we're skipping over that, we can't really be in our heart. We can't really be in our compassion fully. For example, my dad, who bless his soul, I've referenced many times, I could not have any kind of love or compassion for him that was genuine until I had in my mind and body destroyed him completely quite a few times. No compassion, no like mercy, like blood and guts, ripping off the head, digging out the entrails, animalistic, violent behavior that I allowed myself to imagine and embody and move through in a physical way that was safe and contained. That is what let me have a genuinely real, compassionate, loving presence for my dad. It's what let me actually feel his hurt and his pain that was underneath all the anger that was so problematic for me. So, like when we have these internalized versions of people that hurt us in our head, taking up all this space, we can't have relationships with the real people because we've got these internalized monsters instead. And then we end up sort of like waiting for the real person to act like we expect them to act based off of what we've taken in. It's quite problematic, and it's something we need to free up. Again, this work isn't about hurting anybody. It's not about creating bad vibes. It's about liberating our energy. Liberating our energy, right? All that is in us. So if we want to be fully compassionate, spiritual, powerful, loving, caring beings, we have to address the snarling animal locked in a cage inside us. There's no other way around it. So that's what this work is about. So thank you all for being here. And the next call, the next training call, will be getting into toxic shame. It's called Other Primal Emotions and Healing the Somatic Imprint of Toxic Shame, training call number 7. So that will be up next. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Bye for now.